And all two is the power of, no, up in top of Kuf Nun Chet, I believe, all two-ness is the power of destruction. So he's not telling you that Chazal are incorrect, or Chazal can't be possible. You weren't here last time?
No, I didn't.
He's telling you that two-ness, the secret of Chazal is the two-ness, which is destruction. So let's unpack that to bring you together. He's using from the Rambam the idea of Sod. He is, on the other hand, rejecting the idea that it's Mashal Nimshal, and it's certainly not a symbol. It is this idea of an emblem. Whenever you see a two hanging, anything brought to you by the number two is always destruction. Even if it's like an explosion into a million pieces, it's brought to you by the number two.
You reminded of Sesame Street.
Yes, I do that on purpose. I know my audience.
Can't say I wasn't thinking about it either.
Okay. So, let us continue on Kuf Nun Chet. Let's deal with the skip down to the Naktinan and Kuf Nun Chet and to Nechoshet. Mr. Yablok, can we continue?
Kuf Nun Chet?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he saying the same thing, meaning when only about Chazal, or even about, certainly the Torah also, meaning, I don't understand the meaning, for example, we were talking about two words, like equality, which is like separation and division, so is that different than saying now that, that it's an emblem?
No, it is an emblem. Meaning, for a symbol to work, it has to either be a partly true, or it has to remind you of something. But this is not, this is the emblem, this is the number two. It's not partly true, it's just hanging there, and you see two-ness, like a barber pole means destruction. Symbolism would be a rose stands for love, because it's something used in modern romance, or a shard of the World Trade Center stands for a terrorist act. It's a part used as a whole, for example. Or that's one type of symbol. Or another type of symbol is when you try to convey something with your imagination, and it's in some way it's a much more emotive, expressive picture than just saying it without the symbol. An example of that, of symbolism, would be little teeny kotels, little olive wood kotel in your living room. It's a symbol for your attraction to Jerusalem. But if you hung the number two in your living room, there's nothing the observer sees there other than having to know the secret that two-ness is destruction. What?
I'm saying also, let's say, circling the Torah, there are two flukos. What would read into that? That can't be an emblem that actually is.
Because then it has to be non-emblemic. Or you're going to be surprised by what he says. I don't remember what he says on that. Sometimes he takes very interesting turns on things. Okay? Nechoshet. Matzinan?
Matzinan Tibshal Nechoshet, Zotoloma. Kosh Zesha Hayapol, Vavavavavavavav, Teva Nechoshet.
I didn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so bronze stands for hardness. That doesn't mean the bird had a beak of bronze, but Chazal are telling you this emblem of bronze, of hardness. Okay, so you get that? Let's get down to Mashamar.
Okay.
Why is it a yatush? Why is it the mosquito? Because it itself is not a real creation, because it doesn't live 12 months and it has no essence. It's just a transitory being. It's only a potential. It's only an energy. So saying mosquito means something transitory, meaning it's basically saying nothing. It's saying shumdavar, meaning he is being smitten as a mida keneged mida, and don't go looking for even for the mosquito, because mosquito is a way of saying nothingness. Mosquitoes, lice, they're ways of saying nothingness. Don't look for a real mosquito. Don't look for turning into a bird. Don't look for the metal. Don't look for the parts of the brain. It is telling you how God exacted justice from him. And I am going to go on and read some more, but I want to, now that you've had some time and Maharal has repeated it enough in a full way, what do you think of this? Because you've got to get this for going further to our macro structures of Maharal. Meaning until now, I've been leading your hands and picking out topics. Now that we're getting how he actually does Parshanut, so I can send you to even bigger pieces, let's talk through this Derech Parshanut. Anyone have any reactions? You can even deal with the visceral before the cognitive ones. None? It's all the way all of you think? Yes?
I want them most.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they're very common on it.
Okay. I mean, what is... Is he taking the story of... Someone asked me, does the Maharal take the story of the mosquito ending Titus's brain, pecking at him, turning into a bird, having a cool beak of brass? Does he take it literally?
No.
Does he believe in it?
No. The same way he doesn't?
Well, he doesn't not believe in it, but what does it mean?
I guess it represents qualities as opposed to physical actions.
Yeah. It's entirely qualities, and you have to read Chazal as one of qualities, not physical actions. Yes?
If we just switch around the word qualities here for something like... it doesn't be that far from the Rambam agreement.
It's not far at all. It's using the Rambam, but where Rambam tends to use parables and allegory, this is using emblem. It's using its qualities.
The difference between emblem and allegory is related to objects.
So we could be here. You weren't here last time. So, yeah. Yes. Okay. If you want, we can do some of this in terms of now in the post-Lumbus age. If you've ever learned of Yosef Engel, he will use Maharal for halakha because everything then becomes a conceptual quality. What? When you take the pots and pans and the actual chametz out of the mesechet using this method, everything becomes a quality that I can now analyze. Yes?
The Is there some sort of conclusion that is drawn when Maharal takes these literally or not? Or it's just that he sort of takes it literally and sort of doesn't?
Well, he certainly believes in it, but he doesn't believe it's the Chitzon. And it's not what you would call literal if you meant the surface read of it. He believes you have to understand the levels of Chazal and see that they're always telling you about these emblems and qualities.
So they are really parabolic in a sense to him also, right?
Well, parabolic would usually mean an image, and this is less the image than knowing the very fixed emblem. Okay, slightly different. Yes.
Why did Maharal think that Chazal chose this conduit?
Because this is, let's go back to the very first or second class. If you believe Torah is sense data, then you're like the Gentiles and you're doing philosophy. Torah is not sense data. Torah is nivdal, Torah is chachma, and you have to understand it in the realm of chachma.
So what's the intersection between Agartha and Halacha? Did Maharal derive halachic concepts from Agartha?
The answer is he didn't, or we may not know of it, because all we have is the little pieces that first came out in the Rishulti Beshrift, and we have a small volume of some Chiddushei Torah from him. But we don't have his full corpus to really judge. They didn't survive. But most of the stuff that survived is Perish and Yeridea, is Maharal, you know, all on the Soros, but, you know, things like Peacocks or Kosher for Ashkenazim, and that are from the Maharal. But that's, you're not going to see anything from that. I can't really answer because we don't really have it. But what I can answer is if you go through the Avnei Nezer, of the Sefer Shalom from the beginning of the 20th century, then halacha is derived from these categories. Yes.
Does Maharal also view non-agadic sources in that way? Like, they sort of all have some sort of nibdal quality to them. Like when you say, like, the ox gores the shore, like, so the
There would be. Maharal does not make a distinction between halacha and agadita. This is Chazal.
Right.
You have his contemporary, the Marashah, who does have a perish in both the halacha and the agadita separately, but then wrote, I forgot what daf, that he regrets having separated into two commentaries because they're really one. Meaning, as this generation, now that you've reviewed your notes, is the generation that has the printed books from Svarad, and Svarad really did separate halacha and agadita, they still come in with a distinction. But the generation after this, all the way into the 19th century, blurred the lines. So to give you the extreme cases, you look at someone like the Vilna Gaon, and as much as we tend to retrograde our yeshivishness on him, the Vilna Gaon has, you know, explains Shor Shenagach and Arva Avot Nezikin as a goddess and the sort of Kabbalah.
And tomorrow we're also walking that path. So
meaning his descendants and readers of him would certainly go in that direction.
The Gorillas read a lot of Maharal?
No, the Gorillas read everything, because all of Eastern Europe is going to go in this direction of now blurring the lines.
So why did that happen? Was it the Sephardi influence? It was the Sephardi influence of the Finnish as well?
Okay, that already for the final, you'll all read. Now it's a good question. And what I'm going to push you to is that for the final you have to read Elbaum, which you didn't do for the midterm, because Elbaum will set you up for answering that question. Okay? Because I want to make sure you get through Elbaum so that I can then comment further on what Elbaum wrote. Okay? But it's a great question, that's why I want to deal with it more by the time we get to the final review. Okay, let's go on in this. To make it clearer, if I rather than going on, let's see. Let's pick a different text here. I'm debating whether to continue this one or to go on to the next one.
The gigantic numbers.
Did I add anything? I gave that one out to you, unfortunately. The answer is no. 60 million, he deals with it once again the same way. That I remember. That he, six is the language of completion, same way there was Shishim, Reuben, and Har Sinai. And therefore, to show you that there was a complete destruction of a formerly totally perfect year, therefore it's a multiple of six. He's really decentering it from the entire question of what do the other history books say and the actual numbers. He's turning everything into this teaching you a lesson.
There's not uniqueness.
I didn't say it's unique at all, but just understand that he's consistent.
What do you think about it? That's generally how every approach, major approaches.
Probably not. Right. Only certain Mahaffin actually go that route. You all may have been brought up more on this line.
Right.
You know, others don't necessarily go this route.
There's sometimes that he doesn't say like this.
Like
he takes things very literally. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Okay,
we're going to get up to Baragol in a few minutes. Okay. Let's see. Let's skip to his punchline here. Go to Kuf Samach Aleph. Okay, start reading from the how about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 lines down, middle line. Hare elu shlosha v'shlosh chalakim shehem la'adam. Why is it the Gila Raya Shif is done in Menavoda Zara Aser? After those three. They correspond to the three parts in a person. Continue the hand.
Kasher Shalom, the Nikita, man khashir tahay Allah kutsa Allah isra ve akhaza amalu arsal darush tawbasam ba'al tidrush tibbalo ba'atwa hay esori tnagi tukokha kudusha asher hakidusha asher esori tibbalo.
Okay, let me just unpack some of the ideas here. The three prime sins correspond to the three parts of a person. Here he's fitting it into his system. Then he's telling you each one has a specific correspondence. He's taking the Gemara here and showing, making each one to the extreme. Bilam becomes an emblem of Znut. Therefore, Chazal said he had Bia with his donkey. Why? He's deflecting it from the question about whether that occurred, but that becomes emblemic of the worst form of Znut. Meaning the same way if you were to draw a Renaissance painting, that would be seen as, you know, the painting of the sin. This is now making it in this... you know where we use emblems in cartoons?
Most of them really are. Like, you get
starlings
in that corner because
he's back. So he's the extreme form of Znut. And therefore, if you're Znut, getting back to his making equal signs of things, then therefore Znut is Tumah. And if it's Tumah, you're against Kedusha. The extreme form of Avodah Zarah is not other religions, but making fun of Divrei Chachamim. One has to accept a Divrei Chachamim, and that's worse than Avodah Zarah. You have to see things through Chazal's eyes. Okay, there is Noah. That's really in his way. That's really what it's about. Following this world order, opting out of the world of sense data, and entering into this world of the rabbis. And then the worst case of Shvicha Damim becomes our friend Zitos again. And all of these cases of the exact opposite of Kedusha, they are Tumah. Yes?
I'm just wondering if the Maharal was reacting to any historical movement against Chazal. He seems to be almost trying to redeem him and really put him on the pedestal.
Yes.
Was this uncommon in his times, or was he...
And with that, we can go through the Be'er HaGolah, because that'll answer your question. We'll come back to this and some more of this next time. There's seven parts to Be'er HaGolah.
Is this a specific person?
Yeah, it's from the story.
Do you know what it is?
It's subject to debate. And
this is Jason.
Yeah. So the I just didn't want it to become a whole tangent.
Yeah.
Okay. The Be'er HaGolah, the first Be'er, deals with Chazal, and he presents that beyond Tanakh, beyond the laws of Tanakh, Chazal created Gedarim, Takanot, Divrei Sofrim, and they also had Chiddush. The Chachamim have Koach Chiddush. Chachamim have the principle of Elu VeElu, and Chiddush is this bringing forth all the possibilities of the text and of what God wants. So the first one is an introduction. Be'er HaSheni, getting to Noah's question, is all about those who think that Chazal violate the biblical text. And in this one, he shows that Chazal is the best way to live. Chazal is the correct order of understanding how to carry things out. that it's not about what the text says, but about the true chokhmah of how to live. There are two big examples within Der HaSheni, both of them incredibly, both of them say Darshani for why he picked these two examples. The second example he gives of what he wants to defend that you wouldn't think makes sense is Shalosh Aras. You would think Chazal doesn't make any sense and it's against the biblical text because Shalosh Aras makes you gluttonous. What is he responding to there? Either some sort of Christian monastic argument against the need for food, or the implicit trinity of Shalosh Aras. There's something that we don't know the actual how it got there. Because if anything's depicted as being against the nature of Teva, Shalosh Aras is probably the last one most of us would have picked. So there probably is a polemic against someone saying we should be more otherworldly and eat less. The other example that he picks as seeming to violate 16th century standards of Chachma is Bia Shalo Kedarka. And the biggest one is a part of that there, Shani's of Bia Shalo Kedarka. Because, and there it clearly is, he's arguing against Christians who do consider sodomy to be a sin, and to be carnal and to be physical, and he wants to justify why the halachic tradition permits it, which is why I think the Shalosh Aras one is probably also an anti-Christian polemic, because they said you shouldn't eat, you shouldn't have sex, and therefore he's justifying both. His answer for Bia...
What do you mean the halakha tradition accepts that?
Tosos.
Where?
The Daf in Sanhedrin? Kuf, something in Sanhedrin. What? Yeah, I mean, as like I said, it's not a hard one to find. I mean, just...
The Gemara that we learned to teach this year, we're talking about its effect, it doesn't mean that it's allowed or it's permissible.
It affects something
halakhically,
more than your
tradition,
and
something
which is
permissible.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, you can rape
a... No, that's not what Shalok Kedarka means here.
No, but I'm saying you could also rape someone that's not allowed, but it would work if she were not, meaning the tradition would be utopia.
Right, so the point is...
So just because it works, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's okay.
Okay, but in the Ashkenaz tradition, we will definitely see from Tosfos on it's seen as okay. And this one, he goes into a whole discussion how women are chomer in possession and men are tsura. And this shows you the importance of the hierarchy and the structure. And it really shows the position of women in the universe. And that's the importance of Bia Shalo Kedarka. Because Kiddarcha could have all sorts of practical for procreation and other reasons, but here it's clearly to show the subservience, which itself is an incredibly not the way most of us would have argued that, played that defense. I'm not doing the text inside. Ber HaShlishi, he defends though against those who say that Chazal is not linguistic pshat, that it's not the meaning of the linguistic meaning. And his answer is, it basically comes down, even though he's saying yes, it is linguistic meaning, he basically says linguistic meaning is Chachma. Yes?
You said that that the rabbis go against the text. Meaning that
the
concern of the many words is talking about.
Right.
I mean, there's so many more. I understand you said that, but these aren't even in there.
Yeah,
this is not text. This is just whatever was decided.
That's why there's a story, is we're seeing a tip of an iceberg in this book. Because when you look at it, and if you say this is the argument, that's why there's a lot to be done with this. Because you know you're seeing the tip of an iceberg and a discussion that is just so not what we would have put in the mouth of either side.
Yeah. Huh? No discussion on top of sign, no discussion right. of the mishpatim with the ship.
In the fourth bear is his one where he puts down what he personally thinks. In the fourth bear, he quotes the Rambam's introduction to Zrayim and the Rambam's introduction to Perek Chelek and says both of them are correct. We need to find the true meaning of Chazal. We don't treat Chazal on our first read and therefore dismiss it. We have to look for the true meaning of Chazal. In the Per Ravi, he openly says Chazal is Chachmat Nistar. It's a secret wisdom. Therefore, one cannot add and subtract from the words of Chazal. They are Chachmei Halev, in the lave in that big broad sense. So unlike those who only have sense data and study science, philosophy, or linguistics, Chazal or Chachmat HaLev, which is so much more, you shouldn't therefore question the rabbis based on your sense data. In this pair, he's clearly not completely arguing for his own approach, meaning he allows both his approach and the Rambam's approach, and even the Kabbalah approach. In this one, he's arguing for the importance to understand that Chazal or Chachmat Nistar, and don't question them from senses, and that seems to be more important than driving home his own particular derech. Okay, that's an important point just to take. This is one of those that if you look at it everywhere else, he's doing his derech. Here he basically wants to defend Chazal, and he'll take any of the derechim. He says there's a Kabbalah, a tradition about what Torah meant from the time of the Nevi'im, and if you don't have that Kabbalah, how can you question the rabbis? This is where he says rejecting the rabbis is about Avodah Zarah. And then he gives you cases which, once again, let me take your question before I go on, because his examples that he's going to give, his four or five examples of what you have to appreciate about Chazal are once again not the ones we would have given. Yes?
You said that Maharal said that we shouldn't question Chazal based on our own sense data.
Yeah.
How does that manifest itself in terms of the medicine that Chazal is used, or maybe their subscription to demons? Things that nowadays are based on our own sense data are considered false.
Right. So on one hand I could say, okay, you're a minimal picarist and you're questioning Chazal and that's the end of you and let's burn you at the stake. If you believed it, the answer is, if you still fought for it, but the answer he gives is no, they believed in Shadim. What are Shadim? Shadim are powers of are powers that take away from the proper Netzivot Olam. Shadim are things that cause harm to you, because we know going away from the Netzivot will cause harm. So for example, Mazikim will come to harm you at night, because that's a time when you will fall away from being on the proper Netzivot. Okay? So he's not, unlike For example, the Maritz Chayes and other modern rationalists who will say that, of course, we don't hold from those things, and there's no continuity, and that's not the true part of Chazal, and we'll separate Chazal from the medicine. All these modern answers, he will tell you there's a deep secret in it. So too with the medicine, you, Baba Seinu HaRabim, think Chazal are telling you something like sense data, which is medicine. No, they're telling you a deep wisdom. Well, he'll explain it to you. Be patient. But what he's not letting you do is separate out and say this is just Batel or this wasn't truly Chazal, because it's in the Gemara.
For example, like when the Chazam said it, I don't know if this is an exact quote, but there are some sugyas in Gittin that discuss how to cure certain diseases.
And therefore this disease has this power, and you have to understand the power of this, or what the emblem is, and you have to understand what Chazal are telling you about the effect of that sickness by the emblem of the cure.
They just say to put a dead chicken out.
That's why the answer is you never take Chazal literally. You understand Chazal through the Kabbalah, meaning the tradition, through this great Chachmah and Nistar, through this interpretive method. That's a big part of what he is arguing for, that you never take things at face value. What he's not letting you do is the modern move of cherry picking, of already coming in and saying this is halacha, this is legatica, this is halacha, this is medicine. He doesn't let you cherry pick. What he will do is to say you understand both the surface meaning of how to do the mitzvah and these stories as having a deep wisdom in them. Yes?
Does he indicate anywhere that he received all of his interpretations through his father or through his teacher? Or
no. It is not a temporal Kabbalah. Meaning it's the confusion people make in even a lot of the words, Kabbalah, Masorah, all of these words, between a temporal sense, as if every interpretation you had to receive, and it's a question just of like writing them down so we don't forget them, versus a theological sense of the Kabbalah, the masters of the tradition are trained to understand the text in a certain way. So let's go to the case of the demons. There he says they all clearly refer to some quality. The same way he made Gehenna into the ultimate pizor and disillusion, the disillusionment of the self in the true Torah perspective. He didn't get involved saying we don't believe in, you know, realms of pitch fire and boiling excrement. He said these are all forms of extreme, if you go to the completely the physical, here we are now giving emblems of being completely separated from God. And of course we believe in Gehenna, and it means what he tells it for you to mean. Yes?
Would he really say that he believes the way he's interpreting the text is the same way that Chazal interpreted the text, in the way that Gilman originally interpreted the text?
In this Be'er, the answer is no. He would say you have to understand it, but he's letting show some of his cards, basically saying it's not my way, then the Rambam's way, but some other way that you understand that Chazal is also.
But they're all different, and the old ways are very different.
But he still sees you as opposed to these literal figures. Whether you're Rambam, Kabbalah, or Maharal, you clearly are not reading the text on a surface level. This point he shows it, And that's what Elbaum will be grappling with. How much is he different, or think he's different or the same than the Rambam or than Kabbalah? But in most other places, he's only presenting his approach.
There's nobody that interprets all these literally. I think that would have been the standard approach, and it's only the one or two who are exceptions to who don't interpret all these things on the surface level.
Okay.
They're now most rabbis who ask.
Well, that's only because they've been trained that way. I mean, we've created a whole weave of different, whatever approach you're teaching, we will present Maimonideans, Ki'ilu, they are presenting a surface read, even though they're not. We'll present Rashi and Ashkenaz that way, even if they're not. We've created this whole huge weave. We will leave the Maharal out of our canon. We will read only the Pshat level of the Ramban, not the Sod. When we've created this huge cultural weave that's left out that owner, he's creating a weave that only sees the true hidden chachma behind everything.
Yeah, every 10 lines I'll tell you in some passages, say, there is that Alok. Alok, he won't tell you about it. So, like, is this, what's he?
The answer is a lot of times he does. Yeah, a lot of times the Malkut Ode, just because he didn't go back to it, but in other places, yeah, some of those same places he says Malkut Ode in a different sefer, he'll then spend 20 pages spelling it out. It's not just an esotericism saying, I'm not going to go there.
I've spoken to a few people like this, and they say that a lot of times they're missing doors and stuff like that. That's what he's talking about.
Okay. But have you studied Kabbalah? We went this in the start of the course. Half the class has studied Kabbalah, you haven't. And the point is, until you know Zohar, there's very little evidence for that. I mean, usually the people who tell you that are people who haven't studied Zohar themselves. They're just assuming, okay, there's a sefer there called the Zohar. I mean, if you want to show me that for a paper...
I can show you a lot of those.
What?
I haven't seen it, but someone told me a lot of the footnotes.
You can't do it from a footnote, because those could be all sheker. If you're going to do it from a footnote, people could also... You know, that's not going to prove anything, and it's not going to go too far. The fact that someone can footnote that way doesn't mean anything. You got to do it from actually opening up the Zohar. If that's what you want to do, call a kahod. I'd appreciate that greatly. Because we barely even have evidence that he had one. We know he had a Bahir, a Sefer Yetzira, a Meir ben Gabbai. And if it's just the hoo-hoo of this one talks Sod and that talks Sod, that doesn't prove anything, because we're in a world where he sees everybody talking Sod. Now his Masorah is one that everybody talks Sod. Whether it's Ashkenaz, Rambam, everybody talks Sod, or else it's not Chazal.
It's part of the general way of interpretation.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, let's deal with a perfect example about where David is incorrect, and it's the very first thing we're going to get to. He's going to give cases to defend Chazal. The first one is, what does it mean when God prays? Okay, so he's answering up someone who's coming to him, what does it mean that God prays? Wherever Kabbalist you look at, pre-Kabbalah, Hasidic Ashkenaz, Zohar, God praying means there's going to be a connection between the Shekhinah, Malchut, and the Sphira of Tiferet. It means there are interdivine structures of the Sphirot, and God praying means that the lower realms of the divine have to connect to the higher realms of the divine. Okay, there's no one who differs in that. You'll find that in all Kabbalists is a basic definitional position. You'll find it in Meir ibn Gabbai. And for Maharal, how does he explain that? He explains it through the midrash that God made the moon smaller. Is that the moon waxes and wanes. And the fact that it waxes and wanes means that it doesn't have its own light. The sun is its own light. And the moon itself sacrificed itself. Back to his idea of sacrifice. The moon sacrificed itself. It offered itself up before the greatness of the sun. It's all about the giving of the self. I skipped the paragraph and I'm reading the next one. What does it mean for God praise? Hold off of that, let's just get to it in a minute. God praise for Maharal means that there is a Nistar. Prayer means sacrifice. Prayer means giving, going away from the self. And therefore the same way when we go away from the self, it means Panimi. God praying means God has a Panimi behind the chitzon of this world. It's about the panimi reality of the world. So rather than any Kabbalist who believes God praying is some form of l'shem yichud, God praying for Maharal means there's a panimius to reality. Because prayer for us is panimius, prayer for God is prayer for God means God is truly about panimius. Second thing he deals with, what does it mean that the moon waxes and wanes, or God made the moon smaller? It means that the moon had sacrificed itself before the sun, and it realized its dependency within the scheme, not that the moon actually became smaller, but anything subservient to anything else is seen as smaller. Once again, that's connected to Zohar. For the Zohar, Mir HaYareach, which is a whole section in both Meir Ben Gabbai and Ramak. You listening, David? Take notes. The Mir HaYareach is about how the Shefa and the Bracha doesn't always come to the world, and that there's a period with the world, Alpi Kabbalah. Here it means, he doesn't say that at all. He says the moon got smaller, meaning it understands its place in Seder HaOlam, that it sacrificed before the sun. There is no actual pirud or variant of bracha and connection. Yes?
Is he reading more that talks about how Moshe was the sun and Yeshua was the moon, and sort of how Yeshua was sort of supposedly dependent upon Moshe? Is he reading more?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly the direction he goes in. And that's very not the direction Kabbalah goes in. Because Kabbalah has an interdivine realm of Sfirot. And so therefore Miut. Meaning, if Maharal is always Eichud, Kabbalah is by definition Kamut. So when a Kabbalist hears the word Kamut, a Kabbalist wants to give you the formula for how much. Does that mean it's not getting chesedim? Does it mean Malchut is separated from Tiferet? Does it mean things are not coming from Arachankin? Does that mean that you now have, you know, it's, if you hear me, if you ask how, it's not going to explain it, that it just means self-sacrifice. The next case, third case he deals with is Bat Kol. And Bat Kol, he gives once again, for Bat Kol, for a Kabbalist who assumes that Kol is Tiferet, Bat Kol is the Shechina. If you hear a Bat Kol, you are hearing a lower revelation than hearing a Kol. There's two different levels. Kabbalists will give you levels of revelation. For Maharal, Bat Kol, he says that the Torah has a principle of Akrei Rabin Lahatot, This teaches you that Chazal worked through the principle of Klal and Klal Yisrael. All Torah is of the principle of Klal and Klal Yisrael. Hence, the question in Judaism, if it's Achrei Rabin Lahatos, is not about God versus God's message to the people, but Yachid versus the Klal Yisrael. And the Bat saying that Chazal heard a Bat call is saying that anything that Chazal do is like revelation of Hasinai. So he's explaining it to a quality that Chazal have rather than the hierarchical structure of Sirot. Yes?
Didn't the Bat call and Gemara perceive as something external to the Chacham?
It is in the 20th century reads in our world wanting to emphasize Lo Bashamayim He. Many of the Rishonim and Achronim said Bat Kol is Iker Hadin and really what counts.
But aren't there many
Agadot
where they're
passing
Dafka against the
Bat Kol? Because of Achrei Rabin Lahatot, and therefore we have to wait for a Bat Kol to say Halacha to Beit Hillel, or we have to wait for a Bat Kol to say Halacha to Chachamim, is that Bat Kol is not seen as natural versus supernatural, but it's seen as a tension between one group and another group, who has the true Bat Kol. Maharal's reading is that then the Chachamim of Achrei Rabin Lahatot is greater than the Yachid. So even if the Yachid thinks he has the Bat Kol, Chazal have a greater Bat Kol. You can look that up in Bava Metzia. It's not at all the way we read it today. We tend to downplay the supernatural and really take the Bat Kol out. Maharal likes Bat Kol because Bat Kol for him is a quality, and anything we affix the word Bat Kol to, it means it was Har Sinai.
How can you go against the Bat Kol?
Because Achrei Rabin Lahatot, because the Bat Kol was a Yachid, there's only one Rav supporting it, rather than the Klal. But he makes it a tension between Yachid and Klal.
Right, but if it's a direct line from Har Sinai, then how can you go
against
it? Even if it means Kedusha.
What?
This is very
Kedusha. Because it's not a direct line, once again, doesn't mean that here's a list and you have to learn everything and it's just a question of making sure you got the list. There's a whole, let me put it in our terms from an Adam Maharal terms. Maharal would use in our terms as a halachic process. And if you're part of the halachic process, Klal wins over Yachid, the halachic process wins out over a Yachid. The Yachid may have more logic on his side, maybe may also be true, but the halachic process, the Klal wins.
This is very good because in Yerushalmi they asked that story about the Tanur Daf, and they said, "Well, Elijah didn't hold the Achrei Rabin Lahatot. Why is he arguing?" And the idea is that the Chum burns his Tanur, meaning that they're saying,
that's right. And the emphasis is that even if you have either a true Kabbalah on your side or the true logic, it doesn't really matter what counts as the Achrei Rabin Lahatot in all places as the halachic process.
This is in 5.
Yeah? This is in 4. It's also in Bava Metzia on the Daf. And it's unlike if you look at Bat Kol in Kabbalah, like whether it's Israel or Israel Zohar, there it clearly is, talking about a spherotic level. The next one, Bracha Dav Zion. What does it mean that Rabbi Yishmael greeted a Katriel? And it was Berchuni, and then a Kat, and that Yerushmal blesses a Katriel to move from his Midah HaDin to his Midah HaRachamim. Okay, move from his Midah HaDin to Midah HaRachamim.
Katriel, I don't know what
that is. That's the great archangel on Dav Zion of Gemara. For a Kabbalist, that becomes a mean, whether you identify that as Feret and Keter or Malchut and Feret, the moving from Midah Hadin to Midah Harachamim is a very clear movement of Chesed and Gvura. Kabbalists will see it that way. For Maharal, okay, here's how he explains it. Anything pure Seichel is called Katriel, because Katriel means Keter, or Keser, like the Chabad wine. Anything that's pure Seichel is Keser. Katriel stands for something for pure Sichli. Rabbi Yishmael reached in his own avoda the level of Keser, pure Seichel. And then the whole incident in the end, why did Kesa say Berchuni? Because higher than pure Seichel comes the need for blessing and prayer and the need for sacrifice of the self and offering yourself up to God through Tefillah, that even after you have pure Seichel, you still need pure Tefillah. Don't think that there's archangels and there's throne rooms and there's Midat Hadin and Midat Harachamim. No! It's telling you that after Torah, you still need Tefillah. And any Kabbalist would completely cringe at that interpretation. Yes?
In its use of the word Keser.
Yeah.
That's not Kabbalistic at all.
It's Kabbalistic once again in the fact that he knows the realm of theosophy. You know, Keser goes back through and Midrash, through Ashkenaz, through Kabbalah. He knows, he uses the language, but he gives it an entirely different meaning than the Kabbalists did. He uses a lot of the language of the Kabbalists.
But like, just pull out the word Keser there, where a Kabbalist would also pull the word Keser out.
But for
Kabbalist, he doesn't have to, though.
Who? Mara. Right.
He
doesn't have to, but he's taking on the traditional language. In the place of Soloveitchik also, there's many points that he would go into this mode and use a Kabbalistic word for something that's completely, you know, Maimonidean or modern or Kantian. That's right. Right. It's not meaning anything Kabbalists would mean by it. The next is what? So he asks, what are all the references that we know in Chazal to the idea of a kavod, a divine glory? Well, what do we know? It says when all the times the Chazal refer to God as or, as light. Or what does it mean when Chazal said God is a malbush, God is clothing? For Maharal, these are all references to the fact that God is Ruchami and not Gashmi. So, and once again, all of these, the Or, the Kavod, the Malbush, are all God's manifestations in the world. They're showing you the higher Sirot are manifest. Here, they're all going the other direction. It's not about, I mean, for a Kabbalist who says it's God's Kavod or God's Or, it means it's not God's true Keter, Tferet, God's higher levels. It's a lower level. It's just Kavod. It's not a higher level, it's just Kavod. Maharal, it's the opposite. We live in a Gashmi world. Kavod or Malbush or are all ways of saying God is spiritual. God is Ruchani. So where for Kabbalists these terms are compared to the higher aspects of God, for Maharal these are ways of saying that God is not Gashmi.
I was using these words to understand.
Because light is better than anything physical.
Why is the metals?
Because already, as I told you, light means pure Surah for Maharal based on Pachina. So that's one of those direct quotes. That's what it says, that he actually quotes Chachmei HaUmot, that we know light means pure Surah. If you've ever seen those iconography in which you see the sun in Yudkei Vavkei and the sun, light is seen in the Renaissance as an image for pure form. Yes?
I think the Kabbalists would understand Kabbalah and Malbush as lower manifestation?
Right, as opposed to the true God. Well, Maharal turning in and saying no, it shows you that God doesn't have anything physical.
The Kabbalists wouldn't say that this is a physical.
Right.
Maybe you say the lower. It's still spiritual. Right.
But the point is the word Ruchani doesn't exist in their book. They're not dealing with Gashmi versus Ruchani. They're dealing with levels of bracha, levels of chibur, levels of or, levels of shefa, whatever you're dealing with levels of. Okay, we will continue. We are not meeting. Is anyone going to be here on Monday? Can I get class Monday? Will I be all by myself here? When?
Yeah.
You can be here on Monday? What?
Yes,
oh, okay.
Are we going to do the Shabbos Agadah?
Yeah. We'll do Shabbos Agadah, meaning instead of going on, we'll do Pesach stuff?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to do pre-Pesach. It's probably not going to be all Maharal. I will do stuff further. Of course, I will probably do also probably some Svas MS and some other Maharal influenced things for that class. It will be on the final, though, since I'm there to take good notes.
It'll be up.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, this.